Welcome back to the program. When we learn about evolution, we usually do so in the context of survival of the fittest. Evolution is a competition for biological success. In fact, throughout nature, living organisms often pass up advantage to help out fellow members of their species. How and why does this coexist with the more traditional ideas of evolution, and can it be quantified? That's our subject this morning, as we're joined by my guest, Oren Harman. He has a doctorate from Oxford University. He is the chair of the program in Science, Technology, and Society at Bar-Ilan University in Israel. He's the author of the previous book, The Man Who Invented the Chromosome. It is my pleasure to have him here to talk about his newest work, The Price of Altruism, George Price and the Search for the Origins of Kindness. Oren Harman, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Good to have you here. Tell us who George Price was.
Well, George Price was really a sort of real-life Forrest Gump character. He was born in New York in 1922 and killed himself in a squat in London in the winter of 1975. George Price was an incredibly brilliant but also socially awkward man, probably somewhere on the autism spectrum, who found himself throughout his life at the center of different scientific revolutions in different fields in the 20th century. So he worked at the Manhattan Project as a chemist, working on the atom bomb. He then turned to a completely different field and began working at Bell Labs with people like Bardeen and Shockley on transistor research in the midst of the telecommunications revolution at mid-century. He left that again and began working as a medical worker at one of the greatest oncology centers in Minnesota in the 1950s, left that once again and invented computer-aided design, which was later taken by IBM, and of course they made millions of it. He never took out a patent. So this was a man who found himself solving important scientific problems in different fields and then disappearing like a phantom. Until in the 1960s, something quite dramatic happened to him. He had a thyroid problem and was operated on. And the operation was a success from the point of view of the cancer, but it left him somewhat disabled in one of his arms and shoulders. And this threw him into a great depression. He thought life wasn't worth living. And so he'd already left his family, but he really abandoned his two little daughters now. He decided to leave his job at IBM against the advice of all of his friends, decided to leave his country and move to England for one last crack at one great scientific mystery. And that was the mystery, ever since Darwin, of the evolution of kindness or of altruism.
What was it that set him on that quest? What was it that set him in the direction of trying to understand this notion of altruism or kindness?
Well, I think in George's case, it had to do, again, he was sort of in the midst of a very deep depression. He thought that he didn't want to live anymore, that life wasn't worth living. And he had terrible pangs of regret about leaving his family. And so the initial impetus for trying to work on the problem of altruism was trying to solve the problem of family. Where had family come from? Why in the evolutionary past had family become a unit of selection in evolution? And in order to try to answer that question, he developed a mathematics which ended up being very, very powerful in understanding how altruism had come about. George Price, what happened, the story is incredibly amazing. He moved to England completely unknown, with no affiliation, no training in biology, took an apartment next to Oxford Circus, and began reading the relevant papers on the evolution of altruism in the late opening public libraries. And he didn't understand what he was reading because he hadn't been trained in the field. But he did perceive that the most important person working on the problem of altruism at the time was a man by the name of Bill Hamilton, who would later be called the greatest Darwinian since Darwin. And he wrote a letter to Bill saying, "I'd like to introduce myself. My name is George Price, and I've come to solve the problem of altruism." Now, Hamilton had no idea who this man was, but he was an English gentleman, and so he replied saying, "You know, I'm nice to make your acquaintance. I'm on my way to the jungles of Brazil to study social wasps, and here's a reprint, and good luck." And probably didn't think of George Price any further because he had no idea who he was. 6 months later, upon return from the Brazilian forests, he found on his desk what became known as the price equation and immediately perceived that this was a great advance in our understanding of the evolution of altruism.
Back up a second and talk a little bit about the problem of altruism, the way Hamilton and Darwin before him saw this problem within
Sure.
the context of evolution.
Sure. Well, the grand problem is where does kindness or where do acts of sacrifice come from? And this is a problem that humanity has been contemplating since the beginning of time. Religious traditions offer the notion that that morals come from a God who created us in his image. The secular tradition talks about philosophical deliberation and the use of reason to reach morality and altruistic behavior. Commentators looking at the markets in the early 17th and 18th century tried to figure out, in the words of the poet, how it could be that every part full of vice, yet the whole mass a paradise. How does that happen? How is cooperation born of self-interest? And then for the first time in the 19th century, scientists, and in particular biologists, began to look at this problem as a biological problem. And specifically Darwin, when he was writing on The Origin of Species, considered this phenomena and wrote that this was the greatest riddle and the greatest challenge to his theory. If he couldn't explain the persistence of altruistic behavior, then his theory was worth nothing. And I'll explain why. It is a paradox, or it seemingly is a paradox. How does one explain the persistence of sacrificial behavior, of altruistic behavior, the kind of behavior that reduces one's fitness, if evolution is a game of survival of the fittest? It seemed to make no sense. And Darwin wrote about the stinging bee, asking how could it be that the bee, when it stings a interloper, loses all its entrails and sacrifices itself? How did that make sense from the point of view of survival of the fittest? Darwin's reply was that it made sense from the point of view of the community. This was a kind of sacrificial behavior which could evolve because it was good for the greater good. Now, this idea became known as group selection, and until this day remains very controversial. But ever since Darwin, different scientists had been trying to use different kinds of tools to crack this mystery. Economists, ecologists, geneticists, behavioral biologists, mathematicians, each approached this problem and tried to crack it. Now, Hamilton, in the 1960s, approached it as a geneticist. And following the quip of a man by the name of J.B.S. Haldane, who was said to be the last man to know everything, J.B.S. had said, stumped over a beer, completely drunk in a pub in London, said, "I would sacrifice my life for two brothers and eight cousins," laying out the logic of the gene's eye point of view. One could understand sacrificial behaviors like the stinging bee sacrificing itself for the hive if one looked at the problem not from the point of view of the individual bee, but rather of the genes within the bee. Since the bee, the female bee, is more closely related genetically to her sisters than she would be to her progeny, then it actually made sense to sacrifice itself if it was helping its sisters and its sisters' brood. So this actually became a mathematical theory. Hamilton called it kin selection or inclusive fitness. And it was at this point that George intervened with his own attempt to try to explain altruism. The reason why George's intervention was so important was because Hamilton, in kin selection, was basically saying altruism will always be nepotism. The only way for altruistic behavior to evolve is if it is happening between genetically related individuals. What George Price's equation showed was that one didn't need genetic relatedness for altruism to evolve, and so it was a very big expansion of the possibilities of the evolution of altruism, and Hamilton perceived its importance almost immediately.
Of course, there are two kinds of altruism that he talked about and that you write about. One is the idea of biological altruism, and the other is psychological altruism. Talk about the difference and how Price addressed both.
Well, biological altruism is basically defined by the result of a behavior. So if an organism acts in such a way so as to confer a fitness benefit on another organism while incurring a fitness cost, then that organism is, by definition, altruistic. And it has nothing to do with intention or even with mind. And that's the reason why we find in nature altruistic amoeba or altruistic bacteria or altruistic plants. It's all about the result of their actions. Psychological altruism, on the other hand, is all about the intention behind an action. So if I do something altruistic towards you, but you know that my intentions were otherwise, then you will rightly not view me as an altruist. So there's a big difference between biological altruism defined by the result of an action and psychological altruism defined by the intention behind an action. And yet, since the human brain is an organ which has undergone evolution and was subject to the ruthless cull of natural selection, then just like, for instance, the behavior of an amoeba, then there must be some kind of connection between psychological altruism and biological altruism. And this is the problem that we really care about, because obviously it's very interesting to know how ants or termites or amoeba might be helpful to one another and perform acts of sacrifice, but we're all really very interested in the problem of altruism and acts of kindness between human beings. So the way George Price approached it is, when he came up with his very beautiful equation, he literally walked off the streets into the genetics department at University College London and showed it to the professor, saying, "Is this new?" And within 5 minutes was given keys to an office and an honorary professorship at what was then one of the greatest centers of genetics in the world. And this was a man whom no one knew him. He was a complete outsider. So this was very unusual. And to George's mind, it seemed very unusual as well. And I said that he was a real-life Forrest Gump, but he was also a kind of Rain Man. He was probably autistic in some sense, and numbers meant a lot to him. So he began thinking about the chances that he, of all these great scientists who'd been trying to crack the problem ever since Darwin, should have come up with this very beautiful and simple solution. And so, contemplating other coincidences in his life, he basically multiplied them all and came up with an unbelievably astronomical number, 1 divided by 10 to the 30th. It made no sense that all these coincidences should have happened to him. And so he drew the only conclusion that his very sort of rationalist mind could draw and ran directly from his home into the church at All Souls at Langham, becoming an evangelical Christian on the spot, having concluded that he'd obviously been chosen by a God to tell some great truth to humanity. This is where biological altruism and psychological altruism connected in the mind of George Price, because when he began thinking philosophically about the equation, what it meant to him was that if he could write a mathematical equation explaining the evolution of kindness, what it meant about kindness was that kindness was never really pure. It was never really pure selflessness, because it was always maximizing the fitness of some level at the biological hierarchy, whether it was the gene or the individual or group.
But was that different for human beings? Because one of the things that Price talked about is this ability in psychological altruism to step out beyond the biological, to act in ways that were essentially more human.
Exactly. Well, so this is what led Price to a program of radical altruism in his own life. What he said was, the science tells us that true selflessness does not exist in this world. And yet, man can do better. The spirit can do better than the evolutionary process. And so he set out, in a sense, to beat his own mathematics by going out to the streets of London, seeking out homeless people, derelicts, winos, and beginning to help them in a radical fashion by giving away everything that he had There's a very poignant letter that he sent to John Maynard Smith, one of the great evolutionists of the era, saying, John, I'm down to my last 15p, and I can't wait to give them away, because this was proof to George that the human spirit could transcend what the evolutionary process had created. Ultimately, however, it led to a tragic fate, because having given away everything, George himself was left with nothing. And so he became a vagabond. He became one of the homeless men that he had set out to help in the first place, and ultimately dwindled and dwindled. He was down to skin and bones, had very little to eat, was mumbling about Jesus and being chosen again to tell some great truth to humanity. And in that state, despite the best efforts of John Maynard Smith and Hamilton, the two greatest evolutionists of the era, to save him, George Price killed himself in a squat in London in the winter of 1975.
Talk a little bit about his religious conversion and how that dovetailed with his mathematical equations and the way one seems in some respects counter to the other, or at least an excuse for the other.
Right. Well, incredibly, although this phenomenon is known, what led George to God was a very rationalist bent of mind. It was the coincidences and their incredible improbability which led George to the conclusion that since it's not explainable from the point of view of statistics, all of these coincidences that had happened to him, including the greatest coincidence of him coming up with this incredible equation, what this meant was that obviously it had to be some kind of external intervention. It was God who was responsible for all these coincidences.
Did that not have the effect in some ways of negating his very equation, the very ideas that he had come up with?
Well, what he came to believe, and of course this isn't a necessary conclusion, but this was the way his very unusually brilliant but also unusually strange mind worked. What he came to believe was that the math said that the true selflessness is impossible. And so the only way to prove that the math was not in fact reality would be to set out in his personal affairs to disprove it by actions of radical selflessness. And so this was really a man who had come up with a great scientific theory, but was unable to come to terms with the conclusions that he felt were necessary from this scientific discovery. It's really a case of man sort of fighting his own spirit, using his own spirit to fight his own mind.
Talk a little bit about the equation itself and the way in which he took these ideas that we've been talking about and essentially tried to quantify them mathematically.
Well, the equation is a very simple equation. It's actually a mathematical tautology. It's very short and it's very beautiful. And it gives you the change of a trait, the change to a trait, as a function of the tracking of that trait with the fitness that it confers on the organism holding the trait. And so it's actually a very general equation which can be applied to any selection process, including the culling of stars in the galaxy. But what it's especially good at is treating the evolution of traits where there is a conflict between the level of the individual and the level of the group. And altruism is a great example of just such a trait. Because think about it this way. Say you have a group of altruists competing against a second group where it's a mixed group. There are some altruists and there are some egoists. Which group is going to do better? Clearly, the group where people are cooperating with one another will outcompete the group where there are egoists who are not helping the group fight the second group. On the other hand, if you think of just one group alone, a group comprised entirely of altruists, what happens if an egoist invades in that group. Well, the egoist won't pay the tax that the altruist pays, and so it will have more resources. And if its egoism will be passed on to the next generation, then its type, the type of the egoist, will ultimately, over time, take over the type of the altruist. And so you see there's a conflict in it, when we speak about altruism, in the interest of the between the interest of the individual and the interest of the group. And the price equation is a very powerful tool to tell you how selection will be working at each of the levels, at which level will selection be working more powerfully, and therefore what behavior will ultimately ensue.
How did his own relationship with his own family impact on how these ideas evolved for him?
That's a very good question. I think that George was really plagued by pangs of guilt for having left his family. He married a very religious Roman Catholic woman whom he had met at the Manhattan Project, and very quickly they had two daughters. But it soon became clear that he and Julia were really not suited for one another, not just because of the religion, because George at this time was a rabid atheist, but also just because they were really not compatible in terms of their character. And so George left when his daughters were about 3 years old and 4 years old. And he always felt really bad about that. When he turned to God, after having coming up with the equation, he suddenly was able to give expression to these feelings of guilt and began writing letters back to America from England to his family, apologizing for having left them, abandoned them, acted in such a selfish manner. So clearly there's a connection between George's own personal affairs and how he was interpreting the science and in fact, the motivation behind pursuing the science. It's a very interesting example. We often think of science as a very disinterested kind of pursuit. But in fact, when one looks at the history and closely at the biography and the psychology of scientists, one finds that there is often a very, very strong connection, even if it's sometimes difficult to uncover, between personal matters and scientific pursuits.
And to that extent, do we have any evidence as to how he saw his suicide, whether it was a selfish or selfless act?
Well, George left a suicide note, which was found on his body. And it said that he felt that he had become a burden on his friends, and that this was something that he couldn't countenance any further. So he felt like, because he was actually... he was actually a burden on his friends and not a help to his friends, that he was obviously not acting in a selfless manner, and therefore, in his mind, had not been successful in beating his own mathematics. So clearly, George was wrestling with the problem of the motivations behind his act of radical kindness. He found it very difficult to explain to himself why he was doing what he was doing. Was he doing it because he was truly selfless, or because he was getting some kind of high out of this feeling of giving away to others? This is, I think, sort of the silver lining of this story, because ultimately this is a very tragic life, albeit a very insightful one. And that is that, in the words of Wittgenstein, even after we've solved all the questions that we can possibly ask scientifically, we still will not have scratched the true problems that we care about. So despite the majesty of science, which is an incredibly powerful tool to come to learn the world that we live in, science can't always provide all the answers to the questions that we care about, and in particular to the questions of human motivation. For George, who had a cast of mind which really demanded a scientific solution to every problem, it was just very difficult to come to terms with the fact that science could not provide the answer to the question why he was acting so altruistically. And so, in a sense, he had crashed into Wittgenstein's wall, and he took his life as a consequence. But for us, looking at George's life, what we can learn is actually a hopeful lesson, and that is that although science is a wonderful tool, it can't solve all our problems. And in a sense, science ends where poetry and art and matters of the spirit begin. And I find that to be a rather hopeful message.
Orrin Harmon, the book is The Price of Altruism, George Price and the Search for the Origins of Kindness. Orrin, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.